No, that's not what I want at all. Well, it's been a while since I've done a recording for you, I guess that's partly because of the fact that we haven't really been able to get anywhere where we can talk to important people and record their thoughts and so forth. But it's a real privilege and a pleasure to talk to Jacob Ralston and his mum, Leah, here in their lovely home in Jamberoo, just about half an hour from where I live, which is very cool. And Jacob, of course, and Leah have just returned from a year in Spain, riding with the CEV Junior World Championship, Moto3 Junior World Championship. Finished fourth in the championship in the end, which was damn good considering the fact that you didn't. Pardon? You didn't finish fourth in the championship?
No.
Finished ninth in the championship.
Ninth in the championship. And you finished second in the last race, didn't you, by a whisker?
Second, yes, and then third as well. So,
right. Yeah.
First race, second, and then third.
Right. We've been watching from afar, of course, which, of course, is all that we've been able to do. So, Jacob, first of all, and Leah, welcome home.
Thank you.
I guess in a lot of respects, you're very glad to be home because everybody who goes overseas to race reckons that while it's all fun and everything else like that, it's pretty draining too.
Yeah, very draining to be across the other side of the world, away from my family and my dad and my sister still live here in Jamberoo, so it's good that they're still having a normal life, which is good that we still have good relationships with them.
Yeah, it's great. There is a fairly thick book of Australian road racers who went overseas and with enormous amounts of talent and came home because they were just simply too homesick to stay there.
Yeah, I know a lot of that, and which is good. Why I wouldn't at the start, I wouldn't have wanted to have to move over there by myself. So it's good to be there with my mum, and yeah, good to have the homely feeling there.
What did the old advertisement say? I can't get by without my mum.
That's right.
So, Jacob, you're how old now?
16, nearly 17.
Nearly 17. That's terrifying considering how small you and young you were when I first saw you. So, Jacob, take us through what got you here? Where did you first get interested in bikes and what was the progression there?
I always grew up around bikes. I'd started with motocross when I was about six. But yeah, I always grew up around road racing. My father did it a little bit. But then our good family friends, he raced in Britain when I was younger, and I've just grown up around it, and then to do motocross, and then I did move to flat track in about 2016.
Only about no, 10.
Yeah, I was about 10. So, and then when I went there, it was quite certain that I was going to go to road as a good stepping stone. And yeah, I went quite well in the flat track scene. I'd got three Australian championships, so quite proud of them. And then 2018, started road racing. And then just at the start, just was nothing too big, just starting to race in Australia, just in the state championships. And then with the small go-kart track championships like the Moto Stars and there's North Coast Road Races and down in Victoria some as well, and just moving through them, starting on the little bikes. I had an NSF 100, which is still one of my favorite bikes, and yeah, then just started to then move to the big tracks. I started, I think my first big track was with the South Circuit at Eastern Creek, and then Wakefield, and then Marulan, and then Eastern Creek, all around then. And then 2019, I got selected to do the Asia Talent Cup, which is a championship in Asia, which go to Japan, Malaysia, Thailand, and that was on the NSF 250, which is you'd call it like a talent bike. It's a step before the Moto3. And I competed in that. I think I finished 11th in the championship. Best result of 4th, I think, which is quite good. And also with doing that, I raced in the Oceania Junior Cup in Australia, as well as the R3 Cup and Supersport 300 with the Australian Superbike. So just to have a little bit more track time, but my main focus was on the Asia Talent Cup, but just to get a little bit more racecraft and a little bit more experience, which was good for me. And then 2020, at the end of 2019, I would have thought I would have got a second year in Asia Talent Cup, but I didn't. But then we thought what to really do, and our goal, what our plan was in around 2019 was to move to Europe and compete in Europe in 2021. But an opportunity came up with Leopard Impala Junior Team. One of our friends found a contact and contacted them, and they were willing to have me for the 2020 season in the European Talent Cup, which is one of the hardest championships for juniors in the world. And moved over there at the start of 2020 with my mum. That's just before the start of COVID really hit.
It was March, wasn't it?
We arrived and two weeks into when we arrived, I had my first test with my team. Just near about 2 hours from Barcelona, the circuit, and we did this test, and then the whole team got call-ups and the rest of the testing day got cancelled due to the that Spain was going into lockdown, so that was pretty shocking. So then the rest of the sessions got cancelled and everyone's quickly packed up and headed home. And then we arrived back in our town that we were in called Tortosa. Then we were in lockdown in a hotel room for 105 days, which was extremely long. But
that tests family relationships, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it was good, the hotel that we were in. I think it's quite a big hotel, and they were luckily able to stay open just for my mum and I, and then another family that were over there, and they were very, very helpful to us.
Yeah.
And they had a underground garage where I could ride my push bike around and have some fun and not be locked in the room all day, which was very lucky. Mm. And then at the end of that, we could started to finally get out. We found a house just down near Valencia in a town called Peñascola. And then we could finally do some training. And then I think, I can't really remember what month, but we did finally start racing.
July.
I
was going to say, yeah. March to July was the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah. In Estoril in Portugal. And then, just went from there. We had that weekend, and then straight after that weekend, we had a second round in Portimão. Just competing and working, as it is extremely difficult, coming from no data and no really rider coaches over here to going over there, and it's all about the data and all about all the electronics that you have. And the team was extremely helpful, made us feel a part of their family, we're extremely grateful for. And
did you find it surprising that they hired you rather than a Spanish teenager? Because I mean, there's Spanish teenagers, coming out of the woodwork who want a road race over there. Did it seem strange to you that you got the call up as an Australian?
My teammate was Spanish.
the two teammates were Spanish. Yeah.
But so there's a lot of Spanish, and there's about 50 Spanish to one international rider, really, and which is quite lucky for us as as being an internationalist, there's not as many. But yeah, in the championship, it's difficult, as a lot of the Spaniards and also Italians and French and Britain riders, they all kind of do race in group, grow up around there if they're racing. So they all build good relationships with riders and all start on the circuits. So that's quite difficult. But anyway, I've made some good friends in 2020 and finished off the season with, I think, a fifth, which the team was quite impressed about, out of about 50 riders who in the championship. So I think 17th in the championship for my first year is not too bad.
No. What's the relationship between the Leopard team that you race for and the Leopard team that we're used to seeing that races in the full-blown Moto3? Same hierarchy or overall umbrella sort of thing, but a completely different setup?
They are quite similar. Our Leopard for that team is one of the main sponsors, but also for the talent team side, there's Impala, which is like the Honda of Spain, that's their name. That's their main sponsor for the team. So besides that, I think that's the only difference. They do have good relationships. Some of the engineers from the World Championship team do come to the events of the CV. So yeah, they do have a good relationship, which was quite helpful.
But they would be sort of using the CEV to funnel the best and the talented riders that they get from the CEV up into the Moto3 team.
Partly it's quite a complex team actually. It's different sections of have different management. So the juniors are overseen by three gentlemen, and that's their project. And as Jacob said, Leopard is the overarching sponsor. However, the Moto3 team is a completely separate company and a completely separate entity. Mm. So they will try and funnel them up, but not always, because these gentlemen are rider managers as well. The data engineer, though, Jacob was really fortunate that Christian Lomberg, who is the data engineer for Moto3.
And one of the best. One of the best for Moto3 in the world.
Name gets mentioned often.
Yes. He spent some time in our garage last year and a little bit this year, but...
last year we had Xavi Artigas, he was fighting for the championship and very nice
Christian
guy.
So worked a lot in with him.
And to help him be prepared to go to the
World Championship.
On that subject, it's a complete irrelevancy, but on that subject, I've always been a bit of a Jaume Massia fan. I always thought he was pretty good. Mm. And when he was racing in the Leopard team, I always thought that they dropped the ball a little bit when they let him go and hired Artigas instead. I thought if they were going to drop anybody, they would drop...
Foggia,
because Foggia's form that season had been very, very poor, whereas Massia had been right up at the pointy end. And it always seemed very, very strange to me. But of course, looking back on it now, Foggia, of course, came good in 2021, and Massia, on probably what was a better bike, had a pretty miserable season. So maybe they knew something that we didn't know.
Yeah, I think a lot of things too is your team dynamics and... You know, it's like a normal job. You know, some jobs you'll go into and you just click with the people that you work with, and sometimes you don't. So it's exactly the same with these teams. And we were fortunate that we are with Xavi, the head of our side with Impala. The side that Jacob's team's just been an amazing bunch of guys to help. Nurture us through, you know, the first 2 years of our time over there, because they're all growing as well, a lot of those guys, and Jacob's mechanic in particular, he and Jacob have grown quite close. And so it's interesting that that was surprising to us, but knowing like Chavi Artigas' path was always to go there.
He got second in the championship, I think, by 3 points in the junior championship, so it was pretty obvious that he would be going up.
Yeah. Yes. What about language? How did you manage with that? Does everybody over there speak English, or did you have to learn enough Spanish to get by, or?
The team speaks enough English, and the boss, one of the bosses of the team, two of the bosses live in the same town as us, and then the other one lives in Barcelona. So it's good to have a relationship with them, and they both speak
good enough
English, yeah. And a lot of the younger people speak good enough English. My second mechanic spoke perfect English. My main mechanic spoke good enough English. Yeah. And then one of the engineers spoke good English, and then my data engineer, Carlos, spoke relatively good English. So.
Because I imagine that would be critical when they're relying on being able to talk to you and get feedback from you and things like that. Yeah, the language barrier could be a real problem if they didn't have that.
Well, Google Translate's been very, very kind to us.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Google Translate's good. And look, there's a people enough in the team that, you speak a certain way thinking that they understand you, and it's after a while you understand how you need to reframe what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very clear, because you could say it's black and they might think you're saying it's grey. So, yeah, sometimes it is lost in translation, but as you spend time over there, you start to understand how to deal with it.
And the way that we speak English, and the subtleties and the plays on words and so forth that we accept as being perfectly normal and don't see anything wrong with, to these people for whom English is a second language, find that very, very difficult.
Yes.
So in my experience dealing with people who speak other languages, my wife is Finnish, so I've spent a lot of time talking to her relatives who all speak English, but not well. I became aware very early that it was very important to say exactly what you meant and not sort of allow for shades of meaning, like you say, the black and the grey thing.
Correct. Yes. We're slowly learning it, aren't we? And I think we speak the same as what we probably speak Spanish, the same way that they speak English to us.
Of course.
We mix things up, and so you do have to be really, really specific in what you say.
I understand. So end of 2020, did you, at that stage of proceedings, did you have a continuing job with the team in 2021?
Yeah, I did. They were happy with my progression, so they were happy to have me for another year. And so then a lot of the training in the winter was very, very hard, pushed a lot. Training with my teammate from last year, Chavi Artigas, who we were talking about before. I was training with him nearly every week, so it was good to make a relationship with him. And The team helped me with training with where to train, what we should do for training, and so then.
So what did you do? I mean, we hear all these horror stories about MotoGP riders who break a leg training on a motorbike and stuff like that, and I always think to myself, why are you doing that?
We do.
Good fun.
I know, but the danger that's involved, putting yourself out for a race just because you're training,
Yeah.
I think a lot of it's good for on-bike fitness. Like, flat track is huge over there in the winter. I think about all the MotoGP riders do it, as well as motocross in the winter, because that is a lot of on-bike fitness, rough tracks for long stints of time. And also on the small bike tracks, like the Ovales or the KOs, that's probably one of the most common as well, just because of what you learn on the small bikes can be illustrated to the big bikes. There's not a lot of risk on the small bikes, and you can throw it down the road and it'll be a foot peg or something like that. It's just,
and you would have fallen right into that with your background with the little bikes and Motostars, wouldn't you? Because you know, Damien always said, you know, the KO is a very heavy bike. He said it's not a performance bike. He said, but the good thing about it is a good rider can make a slow bike go fast.
Mm-hmm.
He said it's not any point having a fast bike if the rider can't use it. And he always used to say that the KO was great for that, because if you went fast on the KO, then you were a good rider because it wasn't a fast bike.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and they're cheap.
They're cheap.
Yes.
They're cheap. So, particularly in Spain. So, but during the season, we pretty much steer cleared from any motocross at all. We did a lot of flat track and a lot of karting and whatnot. So that was the main kind of focus throughout the season.
Motocross is only on the winter breaks.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I can't go by without mentioning the fact that you look considerably taller than you were when I saw you last a couple of years ago. I sort of was expecting that because I saw the photographs of you with the other boys on the podium and you sort of bending over and reaching down to shake this little guy's hand down here, and I thought to myself, my God, that guy's got big. But you know, all of that has to be factored into what you do, isn't it? You know, that would impact on how you set the bike up and all sorts of things like that, because that's constantly changing.
Yeah, there's good benefits, I find, of being tall. I don't find that I still struggle a little bit for aerodynamics in the slipstream, but I don't struggle hugely. A benefit is also being able to pick the bike up a lot better than to leaning it over a lot more. So in the rain, it's easy to pick the bike up on the middle of the tyre than one knee, dragging a knee for the grip. And yeah, so I am a lot taller, but I do find there's a little bit of a benefit sometimes.
Well, that's interesting, because I wouldn't have thought of that, but yeah, that makes perfect sense. But and all of these things are compromises, aren't they? You know, because so the little guys, again, just going back to a previous era, one of the problems that Danny Pedrosa had was the fact that because he was so small, because he was so light, there were situations where his ability to ride fast was compromised because he simply couldn't get enough weight over the front of the bike to heat the front tyre up. And you know, I don't know whether that's true or not, but everybody always said that that was the case, and that, you know, if he'd been a bit heavier, he could have, you know, got a bit more heat in the tyre and got a bit more performance out of the bike. So, as I say, it's all compromises, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you had a relationship with the team, built up a good relationship with the team over 2020. I guess start of 2021, you would have been all hot to trot and ready to go, and then bam, we get hit with COVID again.
Not necessarily over there. Over in Spain, it was quite normal. I know here, I think, got into lockdown.
We had a lockdown at the end of March, and we didn't come out until September.
Yeah, we had no more lockdowns.
We had no more lockdowns.
Right.
No, there was restrictions on, you know,
the amount of people
and going out. And
but everyone respects it. Everyone respected it over there.
Yeah, for us, there was nothing. For us, it turned into a relatively normal season. Right. Yeah. Right. So the racing started when it was supposed to start. We could do all the testing we wanted to do and any sort of training we wanted to do over there. So unfortunately, when it happened in Australia, we were over there and going, well, we're in the best place at the moment.
Sure.
Because we could keep doing everything.
And probably very grateful for the fact that you hadn't come home.
Oh, we did come over Christmas.
Oh, you did? All right.
Yeah.
But we left.
But then you scooted back to...
Yeah, well, when we came home last December, we were in quarantine for 2 weeks. Then by the time out, it was the week of Christmas. So then you have all of those, you know, everything you try and catch up with all your loved ones and whatnot. And then beginning of February, we scooted back over there because of the testing we wanted to do and the training we wanted to do over there.
Right, and you got out just in time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of testing, in MotoGP, of course, they have restrictions on how much testing you can do. Do they have restrictions on how much testing you can do in the CEV Championship?
Yeah. You can. It's not as strict, but it is similar. You can only do a certain amount of days on a track that you race at. I think the rule is you can test as much as you want on the bike that you race on other tracks that you don't race on. I think so.
Yeah.
But otherwise, otherwise you can, you can't ride 2 weeks ahead of the event. Just rules so then everyone's a bit more equal. So they they're not allowed to have as many testing days as they want. So then they have a benefit compared to.
To other teams. Well, that makes perfect sense too. I mean, you don't want your star rider crashing 2 weeks before the event and being scratched from the event when the organisers have advertised that he's going to be there and he's lying in hospital with a broken leg.
Exactly, yeah. It's also the expense of it as well because these machines are expensive. Mm. Their engines are costly and so you will have you'll have a testing engine.
We have you have a testing engine, one of the testing days, and then you have a practice engine as well. So the Thursday, Friday, the free practices, you have a practice engine, and then you have a qualifying / race engine that you use for qualifying and race.
Yeah.
So they're the ones that are less miles and a little bit better tuned, so then you can
give it that little bit extra.
Mm-hmm. And there's also rules in how many hours those engines can have on them. From the manufacturers.
Right.
So every...
Depends on the manufacturer as to what they... And the team's agreement with those manufacturers.
Sure.
So I get each Saturday and after... So after the qualifying's on the Saturday afternoon, new clutch, and then after both races, new clutches, just because how much you actually wear the clutches.
Yeah.
But then... Sure. Any other parts like brake pads and brake discs and all that, you can change as much as you want. But tyres, they do have a lot of restrictions on them as well. You can only have, I think, if you have a brand new set for the race and the two races, or if you have one race, you have whatever, and you have two sets for both qualifyings. And they're the only tyres you're allowed to use, so you can't go out with 10 lap old tyres for the start of qualifying. You're only allowed to use two tyres. So I think this is good. And then for the wet tyres, you can use as much as you want.
And this is all, of course, to do with costs.
Costs as well, yeah.
But there are restrictions that the rules say.
Yes.
Yeah. So to ASBK has similar rulings with tyres and stickers on the tyres and things like that.
Well, I mean, if you don't do that, then the richest team has the most tyres and they go out and win. And the team that can't afford as many tyres end up at the back end because they can't afford to be swinging a new set of gumballs on every time the bike comes into the pits.
Yeah. That's right. Yep.
So how did 2021 go?
Good. Started the start of the year with a win, which is quite good. Then the second race of the day got taken out, so not the best, but
then... Highs and lows.
Yeah. I understand that isn't uncommon from what I've been reading, a field of 25, 16-year-olds full of testosterone and I'm going to be the next world champion is a recipe for that sort of thing happening.
So the middle of the season was quite difficult because I did have the expectation that I'll go out and win every race and had a high expectation for myself and was quite difficult just because I think just mentally I could ride well but then just was qualifying so I just couldn't get a lap together good and then in the races just couldn't get it together but then. Yeah, so the middle of the season was quite difficult, and then especially with one of the races in Aragon, one of the young boys passed away in a racing incident, so that was quite difficult. But then, this second last round in Jerez started to kind of get back a bit. I qualified eighth, which was quite good. And then to finish the first race top 10, and then the second race chain came off, so not the best, but then a couple of mechanical malfunctions were done. But then we had a long break, we had 3 months, and then it was the last round, I think it was about 3 weekends ago, and qualified 6, and then so the weekend was all wet, and then the Saturday was half wet, half dry, and then that's where I can go well, so to get qualify 6, and then first race got second, first myself and another rider pulled out to about a 6 second gap.
Which would be pretty rare.
Yeah, which is very rare in that championship, and he's probably one of the smallest riders compared to probably one of the tallest, so he could slipstream me quite a lot. But I did lead a little bit of the race, and then I was always there towards the end, and just made one mistake. There was a lap rider on the straight on the last lap which didn't get out of the way, so the other rider did get the slipstream, which was difficult because I was setting up one of my passes, and then anyway, to finish second by under half a second, I was really happy with after what I'd gone through in the middle of the season. And then the second race, consistently up the front again, so then I was confident through the whole race. And then to have the last lap was not convinced, so I did fall just a tiny bit back, so there was a group of 5 and I was in 5th, and then setting up one of my passes, I got into 4th, and then 2nd and 3rd, teammates took each other out on one corner, and then passed out the inside last corner, and then finished 3rd, so I was happy with that, just to finish the season good, and to finish leaving the team good as well. And
Two podiums in a weekend is not to be sneezed at in that sort of company.
And to finish 9th in the championship, and first international Spanish all the way up to 9th, and then
12.
Yes, Spanish all the way up to 12th, and French trying to finish 9th is quite good.
Wow. So what's the plan for 2022? What are you doing?
We'll be racing Moto3 Junior World Championship, which is just a class above what I did this year in the Hawkers European Talent Cup. I will be with a new team, but not announced yet.
I don't expect you to announce it to me then. I know how these things work.
Which is just probably, it is the hardest championship for juniors in the world. Group of a class of 30 riders within 2 seconds is ridiculous, but new team, so looking forward to that. Good bike, good people, and also we'll be racing in the Red Bull Rookies Cup, which is it goes along with some of the races with the MotoGP.
Well, that's the European circuits. So.
Which gives those riders TV coverage
that
they wouldn't get otherwise.
So just
and we go to Finland for the first time.
Oh, right, yes. Excellent.
Yeah. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah.
New circuit, and just about all the last 10 years, the top 2 of the championship usually do go get a seat in the World Championship. Yes. So it's that with that, and then the Moto3 Junior as well, that's they're good, 2 good championships to do, and with the Red Bull Rookies, it is a selection event, so not everyone can just go do it. You do have to be selected, which
is similar to Asia Talent Cup. You can't just rock up and say, "Hey guys, I'm here, I want a race." You have to be selected.
Yeah, you can't go and say, "I have this amount of money that my son ran." You can't do any of that.
That's it.
Which is good, so.
And there's 2 Australians in that next year, so it's fantastic to see that they're ensuring that the Red Bull Rookies Cup is much more international.
So who's the other Australian?
Harrison Boyd.
Harrison Boyd.
Oh, right, of course, yeah. Yes. Yeah, well.
But when you looked at the selection shortlist, you know, there was 50 Spaniards and then the rest of the world.
Mm. Yeah.
Four Australians.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so to be selected in that's fantastic opportunity to race that alongside with the Moto3 and the team that will be in, it's a great opportunity.
Mm.
So...
Yeah, so you're going over it with Jacob again?
Yeah, so I'll go over again, probably another 2 years for me over there, as long as, you know, things go well. But hopefully, the rest of the family haven't been able to come over because of COVID, but hopefully this...
It's looking promising.
Yeah, it's looking promising. They'll be able to come over and watch some races, because it's been a bit hard, particularly for Dad, to sit on the couch and...
Oh, I bet.
And watch from afar.
And, you know, despite all of the amazing things that Ashley's doing, she's still Jacob's number one fan. It must be frustrating for her not to be able to see him race either, because she was used to come to the races and watch him race, so...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She, yeah, the same thing, you know, she just wants to get over there as well. And, yeah, they want to see what it's all about, because it is...
It is completely different
It's different. It's different to be over there and, you know, you want them to have the same or some of the experiences that we're having over there as well. So,
of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's easy. I'm not saying it in this disrespectfully, but, I mean, it's easy for you to say, oh, we went to Portimao and we went to Estoril and all sorts. I mean, these are places that us people can only dream about.
I know.
You know, we see it on TV and we think, God, that must be amazing. But you guys have been there. It does your head in. It really does.
You have to pinch yourself and take a moment to really absorb where you are. And, you know, whenever we go somewhere new, we try and do a bit of a history tour and have a bit of a look around.
Mm.
Time doesn't always permit, but we try and have a bit of a look around, because you never know if you're ever going to get back there and, you know, take it in. So, and with Red Bull, we get to travel outside of Spain and Portugal, so that'll be great. Yeah.
So, in some respects, it is a fantastic education as well as everything else. And speaking of education, what are you doing in terms of that? Are you?
I still have to do my school every day.
Right. So, how do you do that through distance education, or you've got a program that you work with?
Distance education. So we take a chunk of books over, and then Dad sends some other books over as well. So I do that 3 days a week with the tutor, and then the rest of the weeks and rest of the days with Mum. So still have to do it, still have to be on top of my education, because if I don't make it as a racer, then I can't just not do anything.
I was leading into that, so you've telegraphed the punch, because it was something that always used to bother me when I was younger, to see these young riders coming up through the ranks and doing spectacular things and then getting to the end of their career and suddenly realising that they had nothing left to go on with. And I always used to say to these guys, even back in the 70s, I used to say to these guys, you're not going to be racing forever. What are you going to do when you finish racing? You know, what's your plan when the racing stops? And they go, oh, I don't know. You can't do that. No. You've got to have a plan of what you're going to do when you get to the end of that, because you've got another career after that is over. You need to be planning for that now.
And just...
That's right.
Even then, if I was over there and not doing schoolwork, which a lot of the riders do, just... then you just do nothing all day. You're just sitting around watching TV or something.
Mm.
But I do like to have my days filled also with the gym and with the bike training, so it's good to be doing other things.
And there are still boys that go over there that are racing over there that give up school, and that's always what we're talking about. You know, even if you make it, your career is short.
Your exposure time is very, very small compared to the overall length of your life. Your racing career is tiny.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I used to get stuck into the guys about that when I was involved in the administrative side of the sport. You say, you've got to have a plan for when you've finished racing. But racing just becomes so passionate, so completely absorbs their life, that they can't imagine that there's going to be another part of their life that isn't involved in racing. But there is.
There is. And you have to have such a good balance.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to enjoy a bit of life and your friends and moving over there, having to make new friends and things like that.
And let me guess, having her there probably helps with that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. Not always daisies, don't worry about that.
No. Hey, listen, I've brought up two teenagers. I know what you're talking about, don't worry. And mine were as wild and woolly as what I am, so I know exactly what you're talking about, don't worry.
But his schooling's really flexible, what he's got to do, so...
I can take it away when we travel on the plane or with the car, easy, and then it doesn't keep going when I stop, so as... When I race on a weekend, on a Thursday, or maybe on the way to the track on a Wednesday, I'll do a bit of work, and then that stops until maybe the Monday or Tuesday after, so it doesn't keep going and I have to catch up, which I struggled with in 2019 because I still attended school. But.
Well, it's a matter of priorities, isn't it? You know, because you're in a very difficult position where you've got two very important competing priorities, and you have to try and balance the two of those.
Yeah, I
can dig that, I really can. So who, tell us about some of the people that you've met over there and some of the people who impressed you, names that we know, but we only know them because they've got a helmet and a set of leathers on. What are some of the people who you've encountered over there who've made a big impression on you?
Remy Gardner, I've ridden with him a couple of times. And a lot of them go to a flat track called Rocco's Ranch, which is... It's a motocross complex, but they have a flat track there, which is just near, it's literally right next to Barcelona Circuit, the Catalunya Circuit. So when we go over in the winter, every week we'll be training with Fabio Cordararo, Maverick Vinales, all these professional riders, but just, you ride just completely normal with them, like it's... just a normal ride day, so then that's really cool to be able to experience it with them.
I know, it's funny.
Those names just trip off his tongue, you think to yourself, God!
It's quite funny because you'll even turn up at a karting track and
Jack Miller's
there and then there's...
The Binder brothers and...
Yeah, the Binder boys will be there and you think, they've got to train just the same as what these guys have got to train and they're always... great to be around and they're really respectful of each other both
just
ways
the riders, yeah.
And so that's the thing that you've got to remember, but I'll tell you who's impressed me, who I think is impressive for me in their attitude. It's obviously it's Jack Miller and Remy, but also Fabio Quartararo will give you the time of day. He's lovely.
You walk past him and you say, "Oh, hi, Fabio," and he stops and have a 10-minute conversation with the MotoGP World Champion, just like it's normal.
That's right.
Yep.
And the other one, I think he's a class act, is Tuomi.
Yeah.
Mm.
And, you know, he is one of the riders. Jacob had a photo with him and spoke to him.
He's ex-Leopard rider, so.
He's an ex-Leopard rider.
Yeah.
And won the World Championship with the Leopard.
And you know when he said...
I noticed him very early.
Yeah, yeah. He's good, but there's a lot of them, isn't there? There's a lot that you turn up at the track and the younger kids will at start, you go, oh, I'm not allowed to be a fangirl.
But then
Marc Marquez has been there, the flat track will have been there, and you think, oh man, like, he's...
Nine times world champion. Exactly.
Just pass out the inside and it's just, oh, I'll try to keep up with him, and then next corner he's gone.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah. And on the tracks it's just normal, try and keep up with them.
Hmm.
Dive-bombed
Darren Binder. I reckon he probably hates that nickname, but So when did you get to go to any of the MotoGP events while you were over there?
No. We were going to be able to go, but then to the Valencia round, but we just got too busy because we were leaving 2 days after the race, so...
Yeah.
But hopefully next year, I'll be going to most of the most of the European races with the Red Bull Rookies, but with the team, it's quite easy to get a pass and go into the box. But yeah, it's just, do want to experience that, but yeah, lucky next year we will, which looking forward to.
Oh, look, I think, you know, that's sort of situation where you grab that opportunity wherever you can. I mean, my earliest memories of going to the races was going to the pits and talking to Greg Hansford. And I thought, you know, I can't go and talk to Greg Hansford, you know, he's God, you know. And you walk up and you say hello and he stops and he talks to you. And so, and you think, this guy's just a normal guy, you know. He's a freak on a motorcycle, but he's just a normal guy, you know. And John Woodley, you know, from New Zealand, fabulous guy. You'd go and see him and talk to him, and then he'd go away and race in Europe for 3 months, and he'd come back and you'd walk up to him in the pits and say, how are you going, John? He'd say, g'day, Phil, how are you going? You know, what have you been doing since I saw you last? And he meets millions of, well, not millions, but thousands of people, but he still remembers your name. Mm-hmm. And it's just so important,
yeah,
to remember where you came from and be available. And I think that's one of the reasons why some of the riders don't get the respect that they should get, is because they let it go to their head, you know. Yeah. They get to the stage of thinking that they're more important than the game.
And I think that's with Fabio. You can see that it's not gone to his head. He's still,
because it hasn't been all easy for him.
It hasn't been all easy, but yeah. You know, it's some of those guys, you can see that it's just yeah, that they don't take it all for granted.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is great.
Well, he had a dreadful, the last season in Moto2 was dreadful, wasn't it? He was nowhere, and a lot of people were really surprised when Yamaha hired him. They said, you know, there's lots of better riders than him. You know, he hasn't really done very much at all. But, you know, it's like what we're talking about with Xavi Artigas before. You know, the team managers obviously know a damn sight more about it than what I do.
Yeah. And, look, you know, yeah, they must see something in different people, and
yeah,
they know what they're looking for. We know, you know, our team, the team managers in this year have they rattle off a number of names in which they've managed or, you know, whatnot, and you can hear some of their stories, good and bad, and you think, oh, okay, then they know what they're doing. They know what they're talking about.
They have the runs on the board.
They have them,
as they say.
Yeah.
And look, it's, if you've been, and I'm not talking about at their level, but if you've been hanging around the sport for a while, you develop pretty good radar about who's good and who's not.
Yeah.
You develop a pretty good sixth sense about who's going to make it and who isn't. And I could give you a dozen names of people who are now established riders who I saw at the very beginning of the career when they were D-grade riders. And I looked at them then and I thought, you know, that guy's going to go somewhere.
Mm.
You know? Because you do. You just get that radar. There's something about them that you just know. I mean, I've got two photographs of Wayne Gardner at his first ever meeting. Mm. The first time he ever road raced. On a YZ125 Yamaha motocross bike at Oran Park in November 1976, on a motocross bike with road tyres. And I saw him that day and I thought, boy, this kid is good.
There's something special about them all. And you can't make anyone, any of these kids go out and do what they do. And
no.
They've got to have an innate passion for it completely. Yep. And so if you either love it beyond anything, and that's why you'll move up the ranks, and if you just like it, you won't, because it's scary what these guys do. You know, as a parent sitting there watching it, it's scary, but there's an element of fear, I think, also that drives them to go and do it, and it's the adrenaline that goes with it. So, you know, and this year's been a tough year for a number of those things. And these, you know, when we lost the rider at Aragon, you know, one of the first things I said to Jacob was, you know, do you want to keep riding? Of course I want to keep riding.
Mm.
So they know that there is that element of risk, but the passion for it outweighs the risk. you know, their fear of risk.
So how do you manage it as a parent, Leah? Because unlike a lot of parents, you're probably more intimately involved in what's happening than what most parents are, because you're there all the time.
Yeah. Look, you get nervous. I'm incredibly superstitious, so I do a similar routine once I get to the track. And I think I just, you think as they get older, you're going to be more worried, but I think I'm a little bit more calm as it goes on. But I think
they're all a lot more experienced, and they all understand.
Yeah.
You can't go out and win every race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the riders, there is a pure respect with, as young as they are, they respect each other, and when they're on the track, the team, you put a lot of, you're handing over your child to a team to look after, and so you put a lot of faith in them as well. And I also think, you know, we've built up quite a nice little circle of internationals that we spend a fair bit of time with, and that are our friends, and we speak regularly about different challenges that we're all having there. And so I think all of those things make it a little bit easier.
Mm.
Doesn't make it easy, just that little bit easier.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because it's, I don't know that it's something that I could do. But then again, I've probably been hanging around the sport for too long and seen too many nasty things happen for me and, you know, a lot of the nasty things that I saw happen when there weren't anywhere near the safety precautions that there are.
That's now. It. There is these tracks in Europe, the runoff, the gear that these guys wear, all of those things give you a little bit more comfort.
Yeah.
It doesn't take away, as I said, you know, you still have that element of fear, but I think you see it's the passion that's in the child and that's in the racer that you think as a parent, I can't take that away.
And that passion that you see in them, you know one day that passion is going to be transferred over to something else that they will attack at least as passionately as they're racing, which makes them a tremendous person in the end. It makes them a great character in the end. It builds character.
Yeah, and I think that all the lessons that we both are learning over there, you know, I'm older, so there's things that I've learnt and things that I've needed to change about my character to suit living there. But I also see the things that Jacob is learning and growing and experiencing that's going to hold him, you know, right through life in good stead. So,
because in many respects, life is a racing. Life is racing, isn't it?
Correct.
Now, the skills that you learn in racing are the skills that you then transfer over into the wider spectrum of life.
Yeah, and the things that Jacob has had to deal with this year, going from such a high into a low, and you know, Jacob will say in, you know, the following rounds, you know, he got nervous and worried, and to be able to, I think, to be able to verbalise that, that's a growing, you know, that's a growth there as well, to be able to say that. And, you know, the learnings that's going on is huge. It's huge.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jacob, I guess with the number of stages that riders have to go to get to the stage where you've been racing at the moment, probably largely weeds out the stupid people who are in the game for the wrong reason and do dumb things or dangerous things without thinking about what they're going to do first. Do you still have the occasion where you run into a rider who isn't, you know, who hasn't got their eye on the ball, or has the learning process weeded them out by that stage?
No, you always experience dumb people always all throughout the, still beyond where I am. But Pete, a lot of the team managers, a lot of the sponsors, they see this straight away, and they don't get as much support just being
stupid.
Right.
Because it's a dangerous sport, so you have to respect everyone. And you're You have to respect everyone, and if you do something stupid, then it's noticed by a lot of people, and then you just have no respect in the other writers don't have any respect with you. So
it works both ways, doesn't it? I mean, I've noticed, you know, a few things happening in Murder 3, and I think to myself, you know, how come the team manager hasn't taken that kid out the back behind the pits and hit him around the ears a few times and told him that you don't do that sort of thing on the track? You know, how have you got to this stage of proceedings where you're still doing dumb things like that? But then I guess the adrenaline gets going and the red mist comes down and,
Some of the things are quite dumb.
But we're also in the entertainment industry as well, where people liked, but you know, they want to see.
They don't want to see 30 riders in a single line for the whole race.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So there's that, and whether that's a good or a bad thing, that is interpretation of what you think. But there's always got to be a villain in something that we do, in any sport, you know, we do.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, but the young riders and the teenagers, they see it anyway. They see who's the one that's not playing the game the right way and putting them in danger too, I suppose.
And that was what I was going to say, because they'll notice straight away the radical ones, because they'll know that they're the ones that they have to be careful of, because they're the ones that they can't trust.
That's right.
I mean, when you're doing that sort of thing, you have to be able to trust the guy you're riding with, don't you?
That's right. Even in training, you know, you want to be able to train with the young guys that you know. And we've had a situation recently where one of the riders said to Jacob, you know, I like riding with you because there's this, we respect each other.
Whereas we respect each other, but we're aggressive.
Yeah. And there's a couple of boys on that circuit on a particular day that they just went, nah. So. Mm.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes perfect sense. Well, look, I could listen to you guys talk all night, but I've got to go and get stuff done, and I'm so grateful for the time that you've given me and the insight into how the last 2 years have been. Over here, watching it, you know, at a distance, it's very hard to grasp just what it's all about. That's certainly given me a much better understanding, even though I've been in the pits for, you know, over 40 years. The sport evolves and things are changing, and it's always good to try and keep up with what's going on. So you're heading off early next year to liaise with your new team, settle in, get started on training and testing and talk to people and find out who the people are who understand you better than the others and things like that. Do you have a choice in respect of the people who you work with, or they say to you, you're going to be working with these people?
I get assigned my three mechanics and my engineer. But like, for example, this year I had a great relationship with all the mechanics, so if I have one issue and one of mine is busy, then I'll talk to another one. Or one of the data engineers, I'll talk to him, and they all understand it. But you do get assigned your thing, your little team. But I don't have a huge say of that. I want my mechanic from this year to go onward to next year. They have their own lives. They have their own contracts. Yeah, they have their own contracts with the teams. They have their own families, and it's what's easiest for them as well.
We would have loved to have taken our little team, but it's not possible to do that. So, but also a lot of the team managers will see what the teenager is like, and
they will tend to assign
the people around them based
who fit best.
This is
based on what you were talking about before about their experience with looking at riders and knowing what they need best.
Well, Jacob needs somebody who's. They need them to have a relatively good level of English. But also his mechanic will travel with him to Red Bull Rookies as well, as his helper. And so the team pretty much know who they want that person to be. And, you know, they're not going to put someone, if the child's really, really loud, they're not going to put someone that's really, really quiet. they seem to know who to pigeon them with.
Experience.
Yeah.
Experience.
That's right. And they can change that. We've known of kids that the engineers changed in the middle of the season because there's just not been a click.
Yep.
So they won't leave it, mm-hmm. Always the same. So.
Yep.
Yeah. But unfortunately, because, not being able to stay, the reason we can't stay with Leopard is because Red Bull rookies.
Leopard is an energy drink.
Leopard is an energy drink.
And Red Bull is an energy drink. Oh, so Red Bull rookies, people have said, no, you're not allowed to.
Right.
Yeah, because it's a conflict of major sponsors.
Yeah.
So that's why.
It's the same with the Monster Energy thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys. It's been fantastic. I've just absolutely loved sitting down and just listening to you two. All the best for next year, and be following your exploits as closely as we're able to do from here, but hopefully get to see a bit of you on television next year because of the Red Bull rookies, which we haven't normally had the chance to do. So that should be very good, and I'll be jumping up and down in the lounge room and shouting at the TV like I usually do. I can't seem to break myself of that habit, I'm afraid.
That's all right, I do it in the stands.
How do you manage when something goes wrong? What do you do when something goes wrong? You know, like the bike breaks or something like that.
Kick the bike. when the camera's not looking.
Yes.
Storm back into the box.
Yes.
I do compose myself.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Because this is what you got taught when you're very young, that the media is always watching you, and that this is when you were taught about you need to thank the sponsors and you need to present well when someone shoves a microphone in your face and stuff like that, because that's all part of the game of being a professional writer.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So yeah, it just depends. If something goes wrong,
You do get a little bit, you want to sit down and just talk, how does the chain come off in the factory team kind of thing. But
yes.
Yeah. But we're dealing with humans too, so everybody, everybody has there's errors that can occur. So, but if anything goes wrong, you just got to figure out why it went wrong and make sure it doesn't happen again.
Sure.
Hopefully.
Because they're as invested in the success Absolutely. Of the team as what you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They work. These guys, these engineers and mechanics we know only from our team, they work really, really long hours and
Early
hard.
Early mornings.
Yeah, and this is their second job for most of them. They leave their jobs and they come to the race, and then they've got to go. A lot of them will travel home on the Sunday night, and they'll be at work the next day. And so they work really, really hard. So full respect to them, because they're really good. So
terrific.
As long as you're always learning, that's the main thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, look, I'll leave it at that. I could ask heaps more questions. You've probably got heaps more answers as well, but that'll do.
Anytime. We've got plenty of stories to share.
Excellent.